hopefully this is one of those fads that will be short-lived. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today in the studio is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Good to be back with you in the studio rather than by Skype. And I hope, I just want to let people know, let us know if that sounded funky this weekend, because I tuned in and it sounded funny to me. And the file was fine when we sent it out. However, sometimes files have a way of getting jumbled when they're transmitted to the radio station. It's not the radio station's fault. It's not our fault. It's the wonders and magic of the internet. So I'm going to check with the radio station, make sure everything was okay. But if it wasn't, you'll be able to listen to that program in its entirety on our website, www.principledpolicy.com. And hopefully I'll have the iTunes repaired someday soon. We had some problems with our website, and which I didn't know about. And by the time I had figured it out, iTunes had dropped us as a as a working thing, a working podcast, and it takes a while to come back up.
Well, you see, Chuck, that's one of the areas where we're grateful that we have a listening audience, because some of you are faithful enough to point these things out to us, because that's how we found out that we were having trouble, was one of our regular podcast subscribers fired me a note on Facebook and said, are you guys still doing a podcast? I can't load it up on iTunes. It keeps saying, and it gave me whatever the wording was. It was like,
you know,
not available in the United States store. And it's like, well, so I called our technical guru, Chuck, and we're trying to get to the bottom of this and trying to rebuild things. So you can come live at principledpolicy.com and download our radio program there, or you can give us a call or drop us an email, and we can send you a copy.
Yeah, basically, to speak technically, it was just a piece of software that broke our feed. If you understand how it works, and even if you don't, it's simply a matter of there's a thing called a feed, and the iTunes picks up the feed. Well, if the feed is interrupted or blocked by something, then iTunes says, well, the feed's gone. And the feed was, technically speaking, not there, even though it looked like it was there. It wasn't. So just a reminder to us that every once in a while, you have to go through and retest everything, especially when things are updated. We use a program for our blog site that gets updated. The bits and pieces of it get updated from time to time. And sometimes those updates break other things, one of the other bits and pieces. That's one of the problems of using open source software, folks. If Barry and I had $1,000, we could have someone professional do this rather than some joker who works out of his basement in Westerville. That joker being me. So, in any case, last week's show is going to be up in its entirety, and if it's busted, then we're going to repair it because I have all the raw files. So, that being said, keep an eyeball open.
Well, and that's good, Chuck, because honestly, I'm one of those people who wouldn't know how to do that, because I have trouble being patient enough to look at some of this technical aspects of what we do and be able to work our way through it. That's the reason why I'm glad that you're around and we have that, because I would not be able to think through those kind of things.
Oh, you would if you did it long enough. That's the thing. I've been doing my own software, using this particular brand of software for about 6 years.
Well, okay, good.
So I know it pretty well.
Well, that's good. And you know, it's interesting, because thinking through things is something that we're going to be talking about today. Or let's put it this way, the lack of thinking through things. Chuck, it's almost an embarrassment of riches when we go to do our show prep research and we start looking at all of the things that are going on across the globe and throughout politics, and there's a common theme. The vast majority of the problems out there are coming from people who don't think through to logical conclusions and don't come up with anything more than what just comes off the top of their head at the at that moment in time and talk about it.
Well, we live in an era when people allow their visceral or gut reaction to rule their the way they do this, that, and other thing. You'll very often ask someone for an opinion, and what you'll get is, well, I feel this.
Right. Well, you know, Chuck, and we've seen, I think that's played out here in the last week or so. And again, I don't mean to offend any right. of our listeners. You may have drawn a very strong opinion one way or the other about this particular thing, but I want us just to kind of back up and walk through it a little bit. And what I'm talking about was the announcement of the case settlement between Jesse Ventura, the former governor of Minnesota, and the estate of Chris Kyle, who was a former American military sniper, who was fairly popular and who wrote an autobiographical book, which part of that book, part of the content of that book, was a retelling of a meeting with Governor Jesse Ventura, where, according to the judge and the jury in the case, the former Mr. Kyle played a little fast and loose with the facts, to the point of creating a situation that court found to be libelous. And Ventura had sued the estate because this book was published after, I think, right around the time Kyle was killed, the book was published. Now, I've seen a lot of back and forth on the social media, Facebook, it's yes. Twitter, what have you, and even in some blog sites from some fairly well-known individuals, immediately screaming about how horrible a human being Jesse Ventura was for suing Chris Kyle's widow, which he didn't do.
Right.
He sued the estate. And the other thing is, Chuck, and this is where I would caution everybody, us included, is that before we start dealing with personalities, we need to deal with principles. And one of those principles is the rule of law. And in this particular case, the question at point against the rule of law was whether or not an individual has a right to, shall we say, impugn another person's reputation just because of who they are.
Well, there's another part to that argument. Does the fact that the person has died excuse him
from having to take responsibility for his actions?
Yes. Now, the fact that his assets passed to his heirs, does that automatically... And the fact is the guy died... no matter what you think about his judgment in this case, and I frankly think his judgment was very poor in what it is that he chose to do and how he got himself killed, Mr. Kyle. He was shot by someone who was known to have be a paranoid schizophrenic after he took him to a rifle range and turned his back on the guy while there was a loaded pistol out there. This guy was a vet who was suffering from the effects of post-traumatic stress and, you know, combat fatigue and that kind of thing. And they turned these two fellas that took him. And to one thing that I would say about Kyle, that a positive thing is that he took great pains to try to help other veterans who were suffering from things like this. But again, this judgment was very poor. He turned his back on a man who was not mentally stable. And the man took a loaded gun and killed he and this other guy who were trying to help this man. So that's all well and good. That's part of the story. But the reason that came out, it keeps coming out, is what a great guy Kyle was and this and that and another thing,
mm-hmm.
is to create an emotional feeling.
And it worked. It served its purpose.
Yes.
According to the vast majority. Now, again, I'm not impugning anybody with military service, but as a matter of fact, Jesse Ventura also has military service. He was a Navy SEAL.
Well, okay. This is another part of the argument that you have to be very careful with.
You have to be careful with, yes.
Because Kyle was a sniper. was an Army sniper.
Uh-huh.
Now, technically speaking, Ventura was not a SEAL.
Okay.
He was an underwater demolition team, UDT.
Okay, UDT.
Now, UDT was folded in. Basically, there were no such thing as SEALs when he was a UDT.
They were the precursor to the SEALs.
The UDT became the SEALs.
Sort of like the SAS became...
Yeah, the CIA. Yeah. Or OAS.
Yeah, OAS, excuse me.
Office of Strategic Services.
Yeah, OSS, that's right.
Yeah, so basically, a lot of people have tried to make, hey, and again, it's all emotional, not thinking, have tried to make it, well, he was never a SEAL. Well, he was underwater demolition team. Folks, you strap on two oxygen tanks onto your back and put on a wetsuit and go in and do the things that SEALs do today. And the fact is, there's a reason why the UDT Alumni Association got rolled into the SEALs Alumni Association, because it's the same thing.
It's the same thing, exactly.
And unfortunately, a lot of people have meant, well, he was never a SEAL. Yeah, he was. It wasn't called that at that time. It's sort of like you can think of any number of analogies. The high school I went to was originally, it was a consolidated school district when I graduated from it. But the people that graduated from Hebron High School were considered Lakewood graduates by the time, things rolled around, because there was no Lakewood High School. And there wasn't any Hebron High School anymore after there was a Lakewood High School.
Exactly. Same with my school. At a certain point, it shut down completely when they consolidated everything in the county. And then after a few years of that, the families in the end of the county where my old school used to be couldn't stand it anymore, because their kids were basically riding 3 and 4 hours a day on a bus.
Yeah.
Each way. And so they reopened the school and renamed it. So what is now South Gallia used to be my school. Well, does that mean I no longer have a graduating class that I can go to reunions at?
Wiped out, baby.
Of course not. I agree. We go with the same class with the graduates from South Gallia.
I can see the letter now. Dear Mr. Sheets, your school has ceased to exist. Therefore, you must come back and complete your high school education.
therefore, your high school diploma is invalid and therefore, you're fired. Oh, wait. We'll talk about that on a different show
because some of that is going on
in
a different sense.
But the point is, Chuck, and I think that we're getting right down to the point, is that people need to stop and think through matters carefully before wading in on a side of a controversial subject. We're admonished by Scripture very, very much, and in numerous spots in Scripture, to think and listen much and speak little. I'm paraphrasing a little bit.
Okay. Isaiah 1:18.
Okay, there you go.
Come now, let us reason together, says the Lord.
Yes.
Though your sins are like scarlet, they shall be as white as snow. Though they are red like crimson, they shall become like wool.
Right.
If you are willing and obedient, you shall eat the good of the land. But if you refuse and rebel, you shall be eaten by the sword. For the mouth of the Lord has spoken.
Mm-hmm. Be slow to speak, quick to hear, and slow to speak. That is what we're called to do. However, in this new age, this new technology age of social media, where everybody can tweet anything that's on their mind as long as their thumbs move fast enough across their keyboard or keypad, and they can tweet it in 160 characters or less, Chuck, we get all kinds of things out there. Now, again, I'm not going to continue to harp on this thing with Ventura and Cobb.
No.
Point is,
there's
a rule of law. And the rule of law says you can't slander or libel someone willingly. Even if they're a somewhat pseudo-public figure, like Jesse Ventura would be. Now, we do have some, there are some nuances to that, like in Ohio or in other states. If you're a publicly elected official, slander and libel laws don't apply to you. In other words, people can say things except for out-and-out lies. And that we and we call that political campaigning.
Yeah, the standard is very libel and slander still count, but the standard is much different.
Much different for an elected official than it is for a member of the public.
Actually,
now,
it's a public. It's any quote unquote public figure.
Public figure, which would include entertainers, etc. However, the court in the Ventura Kyle case. Found by the, I don't know if it was clear and convincing or preponderance of the evidence, whatever standard they could, they needed to go by with that level of
suit. It was a conscious, malicious falsehood is what the jury
said. That's what the jury said, a conscious and malicious falsehood. In other words, they understood that when Kyle penned or his ghostwriter penned that section of the book, he knew full well and should have backed off of creating a fabrication about what happened when those two individuals had an intersect. And I think what happened, I don't remember exactly the story, but somehow they ran into each other somewhere and they got into it over their military service. And at least words were exchanged, if not blows.
Well, part of this story is that basically the thing that is alleged to have happened did not.
Didn't happen, that's right.
Yeah, and then it that Kyle... in an attempt to embarrass Ventura, made a story.
Well, we don't call it embarrass. We call it slander or ruin the reputation of Jesse Ventura. And that's the reason why Ventura sued for the amount he sued for against the estate. Because, well, Chris Kyle, as you mentioned, had gotten himself killed in the meantime. And so that's the only place you can go to is against the estate. And the courts have decided, after looking at the evidence and hearing the testimony, that was the only standard they could reach was that Ventura's claim would be upheld.
The fulcrum of the argument is United States foreign policy and its use of the military.
Yes.
The difference here is that Kyle was very much a person who was all for gung-ho, Let's go in there and, you know, about basically kill them all, let God sort them out. I don't want to overspeak his, but that's more or less the attitude. And Ventura is more of a Jeffersonian on that insofar as, essentially it's, or perhaps more like a Ron Paul, diplomacy and trade and, For everyone.
Well, Ventura's a libertarian.
He's
a big L libertarian.
And this was an attempt by someone who was very much wrapped up with the pro-war crowd to embarrass someone who had military credentials, who was very much anti-war. Because the libertarians basically are especially the hardcores, are anti-war and anti-state. One of my problems with libertarianism is that they are too much of a knee jerk. They're a little, in some cases a little too anti-war and in some cases a little too anti-state. They're
true.
They're anarcho-capitalists. Everything should be done by contract, forgetting right up front that in fact not thinking, since we're talking about thinking, not thinking it through, and Barry and I have explained this in the past. If you do everything by contract, who's going to enforce the contract?
Exactly. Well, there's only two logical explanations to answer that question, Chuck. Either A, nobody enforces the contract, there's three. I take it back. There's three. First of all, is A, that nobody enforces the contract, and therefore the contract has no validity.
Right.
Because I could sign any contract you wanted nothing's going to be enforced against me. I don't, other than my own personal character and conviction is the only thing that would hold me to keeping the contract. If I didn't have those levels of character and conviction, as soon as I found an opening or an advantage that would give me, a leg up, I'd be taking it. Because that's just human nature. The second answer to that question is, the parties enforce it against each other, and that leads to
1920 Chicago. Yeah,
that's right, and that leads to very subjective enforcements.
Yes,
almost the same as answer A.
That devolves into might makes right,
exactly,
which means that basically who's got the most hand grenades and Tommy guns
is the one who, wins the contract war.
Is the one who wins the contract war. Yeah.
And then there's C. And C is you have to create a third-party entity that has enforcement powers in order to make sure that both parties carry out their responsibilities in the contract to the letter that they committed to, which means government.
Yeah.
You have to have some form of government.
And government in its servant form, not in its overlord form.
Not in its master form.
And
that's
very much the difference here, because the pro-war people are very much for a strong state with a strong central government and a strong central leader. They like the idea that, for instance, that the president can arbitrarily use the military. Not all. I don't want to speak for everybody, but it's it's pretty much a given, a part of the corollary.
Yes.
That if you're pro-war, you're pro-single leadership. You really don't like the idea that the military must answer to civilian leadership. It's very much an imperial way of thinking about how to use the army, and the libertarian way is very much the anti-imperial way of thinking about how to use an army. In fact, they don't like an army, although they don't seem to mind the idea of the citizen militia, which the standing army guys despise. And there's a reason for that, and that's way beyond the scope of today's program. That would take us.
Yeah, we'll save that for a later edition.
Yeah.
But we're looking at this and we're talking about thinking carefully. Now, as we do our show prep, we see all kinds of incidences where people just aren't thinking. Now, the one that I just talked about was the vast majority of the general, the hoi polloi, as they'd call it, the populace, not thinking clearly on this issue and letting emotion be the standard, or your feelings about the military or about a fallen hero be the standard for what is right and what's wrong legally. But we can't do that because we live by, especially as believers, we should not be doing that because we live by the law. We live by...
We're supposed to be living
by law. Yeah, and I know, and somebody's going to scream, we're not under law, we're under grace, but the point is we live under a rule of law. And we do that because we are obedient to the ultimate lawgiver, and that is God through Christ, who is the ultimate lawgiver, who has written the law in our hearts so that we are without excuse.
Okay, if there's no law, then what do we need grace for?
Yeah, we don't need grace if there's no law.
That's the whole point.
That's the whole point.
There's a standard, it's the law, and if that standard is not there, then anything we do is A-okay.
Then there's no king in Israel, and every man does what's right in his own eyes.
Exactly.
Now, again, this is another piece of thinking, Chuck. I'm going to get to our main point here in a couple of moments. But this is just another little segue, because this one hits a little closer to home. You know, that's on the national level with Ventura and Kyle and that thinking process. Here's another thinking process where when you read the articles, and if you've been following this in Ohio politics for any length of time here over the last week or so, you have to just stop and say, when does this fellow stop to take a breath and actually think about what he's doing in his entire career? The person I'm talking about is gubernatorial candidate Ed Fitzgerald, who is the standard bearer for the Democratic Party in Ohio, running against incumbent Governor John Kasich. As most of you who've listened to this program for any length of time knows, we're not sycophants for Governor Kasich or for the Republican Party, nor are we cheerleaders for the Democrat Party and Ed Fitzgerald. And so we talked about this off air, Chuck.
Yeah.
I have to laugh a little bit because as this story keeps unfolding and unfolding, it gets to be a little bit more ludicrous and it starts making you think in more, shall we say, circumspect terms about the qualifications for certain gubernatorial candidates.
Yeah, exactly.
And what happened, ladies and gentlemen, if you've not been following this, there was an item that was brought up. I guess there was an attack ad, is what we call them, run by the Republican Governors Association, the national association of which John Kasich, being a Republican governor, is a member. And they bought some airtime running an ad attacking Ed Fitzgerald because he, at some point during his past, I think this was like a couple of years ago, He was supposedly found in a car with a woman, not his wife, in the wee hours of the morning, and parked in an industrial park somewhere out in the outskirts of Cuyahoga County. Now, there's been accusations and counter-accusations by the two campaigns. There's been explanations. There have been testimonials from the cops who were involved in the... Because I guess the police did come over when they saw the car or got a report of a suspicious car loitering at the, you know, wee hours of the morning in this industrial park, that they went and checked it out. And supposedly the story was that Fitzgerald, who at that time was the... Cleveland now has, instead of having a mayor form, they do have a mayor, but they also have a chief executive, because they've now formed a the same type of government.
It's a city manager
that,
kind of
that
kind of
Summit County
job,
has.
Yeah.
The only two in the state where they have a council form of government and not a mayor form of government, where they have a council with an executive rather than a smaller city council with a mayor. So they have like a county council with an executive.
Westerville has something like that. Our mayor is the highest vote getter.
Well, yes, and that's kind of different, because
it's president
instead,
of council.
Instead of having
yeah.
city council, they have a county council, and he's the county executive. So he was basically found in this parking lot with this woman, not his wife, in the wee hours of morning. But supposedly this person was part of a delegation of dignitaries from Ireland who were in Cuyahoga County for something, and they had gotten separated from the other vehicles that were in the caravan going from wherever they were at some event back to the hotels that the folks were staying at, the delegation was staying at. And they got separated, and they stopped and pulled over in order to kind of get their bearings and him to figure out which hotel that she was supposed to be going to. That's the official story from the Fitzgerald campaign. Whether that's true or not is not the problem with the thinking.
And that's an important point.
Yes, it is. That's not the problem with the thinking.
No.
I will get to the ultimate problem with that particular thinking in a minute, but it's this other piece that has now come to light in the last couple of days that really starts making you be more circumspect and thinking very deeply about this, because it has now come to light that after the woman was, I don't know if the police finally took her and took her to the whatever, but supposedly Fitzgerald drove away in the car. But now the records are showing that when he drove away, he didn't have a driver's license. What he had was a temporary permit. You know, the kind of things that your kids get when they're 15 and a half years old and they haven't learned to drive yet. And you're starting to think, wait a minute, Ed Fitzgerald. Now, the guy's, you know, probably, I don't know if he's in his late 30s, early 40s. He's obviously had a driver's license, but come to find out after, obviously, most likely the Republicans have been digging about this, or the newspaper, and I believe this is in the Cleveland Plain Dealer. This broke today as we're here on Tuesday. Headline, Fitzgerald went 10 years without a valid permanent Ohio driver's license, records indicate. Now, Chuck, basically, supposedly, in 2002, his Ohio driver's license, which he possessed, expired. And then it wasn't until 2008 that there were any applications on file for a temporary permit. But he filed in 08, 10, and 11 for temporary permits. Okay? And that's a one-year permit you can get. It allows you to drive, but a few restrictions. Basically said that, you know, he let it expire in 2002 and then just never renewed it. Now, you've got to stop and think for a moment. Now, unless there's a special set of circumstances, a very special set of circumstances, meaning incapacity, handicap, or whatever, how many middle-aged men do you know of, Charles, who would have a driver's license and then let it expire for now going on 12 years?
I've accidentally let mine expire for a month or two, and you know you pull it out for ID, and then somebody says, "Do you know your license is expired?" Oh, but it's another thing to do it for 12 years. Now the fact is. The fact that he applied for temporary permits.
Starting in 2008. Six years that he went without anything.
And then 8 more years running on temporaries.
Right, yeah, six more years.
Well,
from 2008 to now.
Oh, 08. Yeah. I was thinking 06.
That's okay.
Sorry about that. I can't add. Yeah.
You as a college gadgetate.
Yes.
Right?
I done gadgetated from college. That's not mere forgetting.
Oh, no, it's not.
It bespeaks an attitude, actually.
Well, okay. Now, let's think through this, shall we?
Yes.
Okay, during that time frame when he did not have a valid license or permit and therefore was not legally allowed to drive, he held jobs as the assistant prosecutor, then the city councilman, and then the mayor of Lakewood, which is the community he lives in. Okay, Chuck. I'm waiting to hear from the Fitzgerald campaign, which we don't have as of press today, whether or not he just decided for 6 years to bike back and forth everywhere he went as prosecutor, councilman, and mayor. Now, unless his apartment or house was really close to the courthouse, I doubt very seriously he was biking back and forth with case briefs and boxes of evidence and other things as assistant prosecutor.
Right.
The likelihood is that during those years when he was serving the public was serving him. There's another reason why you wouldn't have to have a driver's license or a valid one, and that is if you're chauffeured everywhere.
Yeah.
If you have a driver, if somebody else is driving you to and fro everywhere. That would be one of the reasons. Now, and if that's the case, you would have to think that the Ohio Democratic Party doesn't have very many deep thinkers in their war room, because they have now created, beyond the whole issue with whether or not Ed Fitzgerald was doing anything untoward or immoral with a woman not his wife in the wee hours of the morning,
right.
He swears he's not. The police are validating him, even, and the FOP has endorsed him, and the police are validating that nothing was going on, and it was, you know, it was as it seemed, or as he explained it. I'll give him a mulligan on that one. We'll go back to why the thinking was wrong on it in a minute, but I'll give him a mulligan on that one. However, you don't carry a valid, you're an adult male who has a position of authority as a servant of the public, because prosecutor, okay, that may have been an appointed position. City councilman's elected, and mayor is definitely elected. You were an elected official, and you didn't bother to keep your driver's license. And think about it, Chuck. In that time frame, you would only had to renew it once in 06, you know, because it expired on his birthday in 2002 if he got it renewed. He'd only had to go on one more time to the BMV, like all the rest of us have to do,
right,
in order to revalidate his license or send in the form to get, you know, your car. I'm sure they're going to start digging up, well, which vehicles did he own at that time, and did he say he had a valid driver's license or proof of insurance? In other words, did he lie about that? See, this thing's spinning itself into some incredibly, what I'm going to say is, and I'm going to be predictive, some incredibly humorous attack pieces coming from the Ohio Republican Party on Ed Fitzgerald, because is he so dissociated from the rank and file and the people that he was chauffeured around for 6 years and didn't even think that he should have a driver's license?
I'll be quite honest. I don't buy that explanation.
You may or you may not. It's going to be interesting to see how he responds.
There is a campaign spokesman has kind of weighed in. They told the Columbus Dispatch that Fitzgerald had let his previous Ohio license expire, but didn't say when Fitzgerald last had a regular driver's license. And as near as anybody can tell, it's about 2002.
Well, actually, what they're showing, and I went down farther in the Plain Dealer article, it's saying that that right now he has a current driver's license that was issued in 2012. And he held a valid driver's license in Illinois in 1998. So he lived in Illinois in 98. If it expired on his birthday in 2002, that would have been 4 years. Okay? The permit, and then the permits that he did in 08 and 2010. But the point is, BMV cannot determine if he had a valid license between 2002 and 2007 at all.
Yeah.
His previous license was from Illinois. Which
requires a test.
But it also requires when you move and you change residences, how many days do you have in order to update your license?
Not very many. It's
30 yeah. days.
I'm trying to remember when I moved back here from Michigan.
So the question
it was 30 days.
So the question is, well, there's a raises another question, which I'm sure is going to be grist for the Republican propaganda mill for the campaign. How long did Ed Fitzgerald live in Ohio with an Illinois driver's license?
Yeah, which is a no-no.
Which is also means that you...
Which means it really isn't valid.
Exactly. Exactly.
Here's what I wanted to get at with what
sure,
I was going
go ahead.
For. Here's what the campaign spokesman said. Here's a quote. There's no malpractice here. Hitt, who apparently is this campaign spokesman, said, the license expired, it's a serious mistake, and he regrets the error, and he's now driving with a valid license. Okay. That's a rug sweep.
Yeah, and there's a gap in the middle of those two sentences.
Yeah.
It's about a mile wide. Or actually, I should say it's about 8 years wide.
Yeah, it is. It's beyond a serious mistake. I will say, speculating, but this bespeaks an attitude. And that attitude is that basically driver's licenses are for the little people.
It does. It does. Now, I want to throw in one other thing here because this will get me back to my original why the thinking. You know, right here, this is a case of bad vetting by the Democratic Party.
Oh, yeah. Very
horribly bad vetting by the Democratic Party because obviously the Republicans are doing a better job of vetting their candidate than they did. So horrible thinking by the Ohio Democratic Party. The lack of thinking. Here's Ed Fitzgerald's lack of thinking. Now, I'm going to segue this. By when he was found with this woman, not his wife, in this area in the early wee hours of the morning, according to the police report, they spent about 10 minutes on the scene, and in a recording provided to Northeast Ohio Media Group, which is the one of the parent groups for the string writer who writes for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, one of the responding officers reported Fitzgerald had, quote, part of a delegation from Ireland with him, unquote, that he identified as female, quote, so that can register as his licensed driver with him, unquote, the officer said. Because remember,
he was driving on a permit.
She's from Ireland. Where's her valid Ohio license, Charles?
We have no idea whether she had a valid license in Ireland or not.
No, we don't. And the point is, we don't recognize foreign licenses unless you're a diplomat. She was part of a trade delegation. I don't think that has
chances
a similar
are she
legal.
Didn't have diplomatic immunity. Right.
Now here is the lack of thinking on Ed Fitzgerald's part. Ed Fitzgerald, as far as I know about him, is a married man.
Mm-hmm.
As a married man, now Christian men ought to know this full well, and if you don't, then you better listen up. Never, ever, ever get into a vehicle alone with a woman who is not your spouse, unless she's a daughter or your sister or your mother. If she has no blood relation to you, don't get into a vehicle with her by yourself, especially after having drunk alcohol, which is part of the report, and then be found in the wee hours of the morning, parked in an industrial park somewhere in the outskirts of Lakewood or in Cleveland. Chuck, the thinking is horrible.
Yeah.
And again, it leads back to your point about the thinking about an elitist mentality. Rules don't apply. You know what? We're not necessarily big fans of the governor, I'm even less of a fan, given the lack of ability to think clearly by Democratic gubernatorial candidate Ed Fitzgerald.
Now, here's an interesting thing that tries to answer your question from this article from the Plain Dealer.
Uh-huh.
As far as the night in which Fitzgerald drove Grayhan, this is
yes,
this woman.
The lady's name, yes.
Here's the thing. If the magic word, if she had a valid Irish driver's license, she could drive in Ohio for up to 1 year on her country's license as a visitor, a BMV spokeswoman said.
But could that license, because the question that wasn't asked was, could someone who's here as a visitor be considered the licensed driver for someone with a temporary permit?
There's more than one question here. Yes, that's one of them. That's the other one is, where in the police report
did it actually show her license?
Did it actually show her the record of her having a driver's license?
Well, that's a good question. And since this article in the Plain Dealer is bringing this up as a point, I'm guessing, without having looked at any of the records myself, there might not be a record of her license in the police report, although it was referenced by the officer that she was a licensed driver. So the assumption has to be that she produced a license that they accepted.
Yeah, I'm sure, probably as an ID.
Probably as an ID.
But then again, there are all kinds of things that they'll accept. What if she had a passport?
Yeah, exactly.
And they took her passport. Passport isn't a driver's license. We don't know. And there's no indication in here, and the Cleveland Plain Dealer hasn't asked that question yet.
And now, and riddle me this too, Charles, because another, as you continue to think about this, you stop for a moment and you think, okay, what does it take to get a driver's license in the state of Ohio? You have to pass a written test,
yeah,
right? And you have to take a driving course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you
not a course necessarily.
Or a test. You have to take a driving test. Ed Fitzgerald, who had done that already, supposedly somewhere, Illinois or Ohio, maybe one of the two or both, let his lapse in 2002 and didn't bother to even try for it to get a temporary permit until 2008, but then applied for temporary learner's permits in 2008, 2010, and 2011. He spent 4 years, so 8, 9, 10, 11, 4 years applying to get temporary permits. Why couldn't he have just taken the hour and a half it would have taken to go and sit down and take the test, drive the obstacle course, and get his license? Instead, he applied four times, went through four processes, and there are three processes in 4 years, in order to avoid taking a one-time four-year test that would last for 4 years and would have left this, which he finally did in November of 2012.
There's another question: is how long is a learner's permit good for?
1 year, according.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Accordingly to this,
so in how many did he have in how many years?
3 and 4 years. So he went. He applied in 2008, then left from October of 2009 to 2010. He didn't have anything.
Nothing.
Again.
And
then he applied in 2010. Then he applied in 2011, and then finally in 2012, he went and actually got his license. Chuck, why did it take him 10 years to go around to take a test?
Honestly,
ladies and gentlemen, there's an awful lot more to this story than they want to let on. There's something else here.
That's why I talked about the little people. Yes. Because you and I would have to do it.
And, oh, certainly.
And you and I both know. I mean, this guy, Fitzgerald at one point was the safety director. What's the safety director's job?
Local BMV.
Yeah, traffic enforcement.
Yeah, but there's the other problem there too, Chuck. Are we going to continue to dig and find out that he was issued these permits as special favors?
Because a permit requires a test.
It does require a test.
Every time you get a new one, you got to retake the test.
Did he take the tests? Or was there some, as safety director and then councilman and then mayor of Lakewood and then Cuyahoga County executive, was he being given special favors? Again, horrible lack of thinking, both on his part, for being in a car with a woman, not his wife, at the wee hours of the morning when they had a little too, when supposedly she had too much to drink. See, because that was part of the earlier story, was he was driving her back because he was the designated driver because she was a little tipsy.
Okay, well then the question is, really, if you're a permit holder and the person who's the license holder is drunk
does it count?
Yeah.
And we're laughing about this, but it's not really funny. This is very serious. And from a Christian perspective, This has, again, we talked about reputation in the last story, about Jesse Ventura and his reputation and slandering your reputation. I'm trying to avoid studiously slandering Ed Fitzgerald's reputation because I think he's doing a grandiose job on his own of destroying his own reputation.
That's the difference between what's going on. We're asking legitimate questions about this situation. In the Jesse Ventura case, the reason that what was done was libelous. I forget, libel or...
It's libel when it's in print, yes.
Yes.
Slander when it's spoken, yes.
So It's both, actually, in the case of Kyle, because not only did he write this down, but he also told, he repeated the story verbally on TV interviews.
Right.
Which is what made it slanderous. The difference is we have the testimony of police who and records bureaus who say this thing happened. The entire point of the whole Jesse Ventura thing was Kyle said it did happen. Ventura said it didn't. And the reason that, Ventura was supposedly punched, which he says never happened, was supposedly Ventura had made some comment that Kyle overheard or was said to his face that, the SEALs had deserved, or that American military had deserved to lose a few because of the, some of the things that they had done. In their military capacity. And Ventura said, that's why Ventura goes is going around saying, look, my reputation is damaged. I can't go to SEAL reunions because these people believe what this what Kyle had said.
Yeah.
There's nothing here that anyone is denying. Fitzgerald is not denying the fact that he drove without a driver's license. In fact, what's happening is campaign spokesmen are coming out and doing their best to say, well, it was a mistake and really not a big deal. Well, the question is, really, was it a big deal or not? And it actually kind of looks like it was a big deal. And not only was it a big deal, it was kind of a compound big deal. Because there are so many errors of judgment here. And I hate that phrase, by the way, errors of judgment. What that means is he thought he wouldn't get caught. That's really
right.
What it means.
Right.
And I will tell you, you say this is bad vetting.
Well, it's horrible vetting.
And what I'm saying is that the Democrats probably knew all about this and said, yeah, we can keep this under wraps.
Obviously, they can't do a very good job
no,
of that.
No. And in fact, they underestimate, honestly, I think they underestimate the Kasich reelection machine. Say what you will about the liberality of newspaper reporters. Outlets like the Columbus Dispatch are owned by Republican activists.
Yeah, they are.
Now, I'm not talking about Tea Partiers. I'm talking about Republican mainstreamers, which John Kasich is. John Kasich is a rhino, and the ownership of places like the Columbus Dispatch, the publisher is a rhino.
Well, I think it's interesting, Chuck, because, you know, me being around politics as long as I've had, I think there's one way that Ed Fitzgerald might be able to mitigate some of the damage here. And that is he's going to have to show up with Johnny Manziel on one arm and LeBron James on the other arm, and they both need to, like, personally endorse him in order for this to blow over.
And that's the sad part of this thinking.
Yes.
And we haven't even talked about the thinking article.
Not yet.
And we're down to about... Well, 11 minutes. So, but the bad part about this thinking is, oh well, he's endorsed by these great sports figures.
Exactly.
And therefore, he gets a pass.
Well, then he must be a great guy because hey, look, these guys are well, you know, it's all Cleveland team, etc.
When I think about this, I think about when some Hollywood celebrity comes out, and to give you a good idea, Penelope Cruz and her husband. Javier, can't think of his name. But they came out and made some very disparaging remark about, Israel.
Okay.
And were immediately called to task, by John Voight.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sort of like, John Voight is a sort of center right, actor.
Mm-hmm.
And Penelope Cruz and this other fellow are both foreign nationals.
Uh-huh, right.
Okay, so really, they don't really have a dog in the hunt in American politics. But when you think about, you have an actor. We want these actors' endorsements or these singers' endorsements. Well, actors' endorsements, really, you want people who lie for a living convincingly to endorse you for a high political office? And, you know, when you think about it, when you really think about it, oh, so-and-so likes him, and therefore I should vote for him too. That's the first thing I don't look at. I could care less what actor or singer or comedian comes out and endorses a candidate. In fact, if I see an endorsement from somebody like that, I'm usually suspicious. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because sure. They're not noted for their ability to think clearly, although they great pains are taken to talk about how smart this celebrity or that celebrity is. Usually, it's been, come to my attention, really, that most celebrities couldn't think their way out of a paper bag.
Well, and
most.
And that's really kind of par for the course in general in the society, Charles, is the difficulty of thinking clearly or thinking logically. Part of the reason why sometimes at camp you teach a class on logical thinking, on basic logic and how to think through things, and then how to see how our media is geared to keep us from thinking, but to drive us to predetermined conclusions and predetermined positions.
And
which is mainly the work of marketers and PR agents who are politically involved.
Well, I'm reading a good book by Kevin Swanson. It's called Apostate.
I have that book. I haven't started reading.
It's the men who basically destroyed the Christian West. You can say, well, we're not destroyed yet. Well, the foundations are pretty much eaten away. We're now sort of the building stands, but don't rock it too hard. And one of the things he talks about that's a rather important part of that is the destruction of the ability to think and the destruction of absolutes. And that's partly what one of the main problems is. Once you destroy absolutes, it becomes impossible to think clearly. And it becomes easy to blend categories, and suddenly you go from thinking logically, because how do you think logically when there's no absolute? If there's no standard by which you compare something, by which you measure things, then you have nothing by which to judge.
Right.
Your own self. You judge by your own self, and the only thing that you can rely on then is your emotions. And that's what we have going on here. Quick, let's go over to the thinking emotionally about it. And you know, we're all guilty of it from time to time. I find myself, when I read newspaper articles or articles in magazines or whatever, I have to stop myself occasionally from having the visceral, knee-jerk reaction. Okay, stop. Let's think about this. Is this person right? And very often, it's a judgment based on who I know that person is and their thought processes. But you know what? They're not always wrong. There is a such thing as the blind squirrel syndrome.
Yes.
The blind squirrel finds an acorn every once in a while.
Right.
And sometimes there's enough vestige of logical thought left or of absolute thought. Look, we all know that people who reject absolutes have done so on the basis of an absolute. And that is the fact that the only absolute is that there are no absolutes.
That's right.
Which is a self-defeating argument. Okay? So, now suddenly judgment is based on, this is the only judgment we have is this absolute, that there are no absolutes. Well, then your ability to reason is completely out the window.
Well, that's true. If you don't have a foundation, you can't build a building.
Right.
If you don't have a basis in absolutes, you can't have logic. And if you don't have logic, you can't have thinking. And if you don't have thinking, well, you get what we get in our culture.
This is why within the church, you'll get people who are attempting through liberalization movements and the emergent church and that kind of thing to say, well, that's Western-style thinking. You're thinking with using Greek logic. Well, the Greeks did not invent logic.
No, they did not.
As we pointed out, Isaiah was, come let us reason together. That's in the mid 600s BC.
Well, and also you can go back to the Proverbs, because when God is speaking through the Proverbs, it says, I, wisdom, have builded my house.
Yes, yeah.
Well, what is wisdom? It's logical thinking. And that sagacity of understanding what's going on around you because you understand absolutes and that you formulate your responses based upon those absolutes.
Let's just say it clearly. You cannot reject logic and maintain Christianity because it's not Christianity is not an emotional thing, although emotions are part of the picture because we are a holistic being. And Jesus was about love, but what is love? That see, there's the question. What is love? Well, love is the just application of God's law.
Yes, it is.
And once you understand it from that basis, then all these other arguments about love as an emotional feeling fade to nothingness. The idea that the law means this and this and this and this, you know, it means all these things that we get to accept all these aberrant things that God has forbidden in the law, because after all, Jesus was love.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, yes, Jesus was love, and love is the proper application of God's law.
Of God's law, that's right. Love incorporates justice.
Yes.
But it also incorporates wrath.
Exactly.
Because you can't have, again, just like our issue with law and grace, what good is love if there isn't anything to be the opposite of it? God has said that he's just God, too, and that he withholds his wrath, but his wrath is released at times. And that is part of his love as well, to shake us out of our bad thinking or lack of thinking and get us thinking upon him, because that is where the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom.
Yes.
You know, that's where it starts. Now, and I say that, Chuck, because as we're getting closing to the end of the show here, I found a great little piece here. We hadn't discussed this ahead of time, but this is just breaking. That in Congress, one of the congressmen, Representative Stephen Palazzo from Mississippi, just did something that you and I both would say huzzah to. He wants his colleagues to learn to think. So what did he do? He sent them a letter and said that the best advice comes through meditating on God's word, and so therefore he sent them a new Bible to help guide them in their decision-making. He sent a Bible to all 535 members of Congress.
Well, huzzah, yes.
Yeah, huzzah. The books were donated by one of his constituents.
Excellent.
So it's incredible. So basically, what it gets down to is he's basically saying, folks, we've got to be guided by absolute standards, even in Congress. Now, that didn't set well with some people. Barry Lynn of Americans United for Separation of Church and State used this as a soapbox to jump on his favorite topic, which is secularism. And he says, quote, when a politician calls for using the Bible as the basis for public policy, what he or she is really saying is, let's use the Bible as I interpret it as the basis for public policy, unquote. Isn't that what Barack Obama is doing right now?
Exactly. He is calling... And Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid are all basically saying that, well, the love of Jesus means that we have to open our borders, forgetting the fact that...
And we have to embrace homosexual marriage and blah, 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 and so on and so forth. Barry, you know, if you're going to be decrying somebody, why don't you decry Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid? But, you know, and what he says, it gets right down to, and I laugh about this, he says, when it comes to religion, our nation is pluralistic and diverse. Rather than look to the Bible or any other religious book to craft our nation's public policy, we would do well to examine another source instead, one that was actually created to guide governance. It's called the Constitution. Well, Barry, I'll tell you what, I'm more hopeful that they'll read the Bible than they will the Constitution.
Yes. Yeah, because, well, let's face it, the principles of the Constitution were derived from
the Bible.
The Bible. And if you don't like that, too bad. Take our Institute on the Constitution class. And by the way, as we close out, we have registration is open for our class that will be taught in Sunbury, Ohio, at the town center, starting September 8th. And there are more information at that will be posted at principalpolicy.com. including how to register, go to www.principledpolicy.com and join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.